This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Philip Roth, is one of America's most celebrated writers. He's the only living writer to have his works collected in new editions by the Library of America. The fourth volume, which will be published in October, collects the first four novels featuring his alter ego, the writer Nathan Zuckerman. Roth's new novel, Exit Ghost, is his final novel featuring Zuckerman. In Exit Ghost, Zuckerman has temporarily left his reclusive life in the country to return to New York, where he will have a medical procedure he hopes will reverse the incontinence that resulted after his surgery from prostate cancer, which also left him impotent. The diapers and the impotence have been manageable living alone in the country, but once he gets to New York, he's attracted to a young married woman who's also a writer. And the 71-year-old man yields to the illusion of starting again. Further complicating his return to New York, Zuckerman gets entangled with the widow and the would-be biographer of his mentor, the late writer E.I. Lanoff. Philip Roth, welcome back to Fresh Air. Like the character in your previous novel, Everyman, who is also an older man, and in that book it's an older man who's had health issues and is nearing death, Zuckerman is going to feel lust, but lack the ability to do anything physically about it. As you write, he is overcome by temptation for a delight he cannot enjoy and a pleasure that is dead. What interests you in exploring that state where you're having the temptation, but you can't fulfill it?
Yeah. Well, I think that the central to aging is the experience of loss. Maybe traumatic loss of life, you may die, and it may be loss on the scale that Zuckerman suffers a loss, which is loss of his potency and his virility, and it may be lesser forms of loss that people experience, but that certainly is a central experience of aging, which is that things disappear from life. Sometimes it's a mate who dies, whatever. That's largely what interested me in Everyman, and interested me again in this book.
You know, Zuckerman develops this obsession with a beautiful 30-year-old writer that he fantasizes about having an affair with. And he feels that in the presence of this young woman, there is hope. Is that his only source of hope? Is like that kind of sexual connection that he's no longer capable of the only way he can define hope?
No. You know, by the way, so long as he stays out of New York, he's okay.
That's right. And how many other people can say that?
It may be true for many people. So long as he stays on his mountaintop, living his life of seclusion and a certain amount of isolation, he's not tempted by what he can't have. So the book is, the whole action of the book centers on his return. He returns like a ghost to a life he once knew, a life in which he flourished as a man. By coming to New York, he opens up the possibilities of temptation, and he rediscovers his impulse to be in it. I think one of the paragraphs I read, he says he doesn't want to be in it anymore. This impulse is now reasserting itself, and it reasserts itself in several ways. One is he decides, I'm going to stay in New York for a year. I'm going to sublet an apartment and stay here. It turns out the apartment he's going to wants to sublet is the apartment that's occupied by this young woman and her husband. That's how he meets her. So he meets her quite accidentally. But he has a rush of virile feeling without the virile capacity. Jamie and other characters stimulate the virility in him, but there's the failure of virility. So there, too, is a subject of loss rearing its head.
Because his life has been transformed by the prostate surgery and how that's left him both incontinent and impotent, you have some I think, really terrific descriptions of what he's experiencing physically, and I'd just like to read one of them. You know, you write about the physical, about the incontinence pads he has to use, the smell that haunts him when he doesn't get to clean himself up in time. And he describes himself as a man bearing between his legs a spigot of wrinkled flesh where once he'd had the fully functioning sexual organ, complete with bladder sphincter control. The once rigid instrument of procreation was now like the end of a pipe you see sticking out of a field somewhere, a meaningless piece of pipe that spurts and gushes intermittently. I know that's a kind of graphic image, but like the analogy to the piece of pipe you see sticking out in a field, mm-hmm. I thought that's such a great analogy. Like, I've seen that pipe sticking out in the field, you know?
Yes. And so have I. It always makes you forlorn. You never know why.
But I always wonder, like, how do you get like that perfect analogy? You're writing about something so personal, and about you know, an experience for this character that would be so devastating and embarrassing to reveal to somebody. And then along with that is like this perfect analogy to that piece of pipe in the sticking out in the field somewhere.
Well, I guess I don't remember exactly what was going on in my head when I wrote that paragraph, though I do remember writing it, as a matter of fact. I think that it's a kind of association of ideas. You're writing about something, and your mind, the writer's mind particularly, associates rather rapidly, and you get 10 or 12 possibilities that come through your brain, and one sticks because it seems to have a certain kind of appropriateness or graphic appropriateness. The body is awfully graphic in itself. I was thinking when you were reading that what I've always wanted to do, going back to even Portnoy's complaint, and is take the body seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Take the demands of the body, the non-negotiable demands of the body, take them seriously. And now, of course, in writing about old age, I'm writing about the decaying of the body. There's one other aspect of Zuckerman's decay that I should have mentioned earlier, and that is what he calls his disordered mind. He's begun to be forgetful, and not just in a comical way. The problem is he can't remember what he's told people he'll do, and this causes him a certain number of problems in this book. But he's struggling with this disordered mind and computing with what's left of his brain. Now, there's still a good deal left, but there's something has gone, and this too preys upon him.
I just want to say here that I'm really glad that you take the body seriously in your writing, because I just really appreciate it when a great writer like you does that, because it's so difficult to talk about the body and the ways that our bodies betray us. Mm-hmm. And when a writer handles that and uses exactly the right words and analogies to do it, even I, as a woman reading about a man's body, I mean, I still get it. I still relate to it. Do you know what I mean? I'm grateful for writers talking about things that are difficult to talk about.
Well, I'm fascinated to read about a woman writer reading about a woman's body. Far from feeling that it doesn't interest me, it's of enormous interest to me, because it's a mystery to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a book called The Breast once, which was in some ways comic, but in many ways not, in which I imagined a man turning into a breast, physically metamorphosing into a breast. And I took it seriously, too. Once I got over the initial invention, which, as I said, had a comic edge to it, I thought, now, what indeed would happen? What would living in that body be like for him? So the body has been a landscape, just as great a landscape as Newark, New Jersey.
Zuckerman's mentor is dead. His mentor, E.I. Lanoff, is dead. And I want to read the description of his mentor from the first book in which Zuckerman was the main character, and that was The Ghost Rider. And this was published in, what, 1979, was it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so in that, when Lanoff, when Zuckerman first goes to Lanoff's home in the country, he says, "I had come to submit myself for candidacy as nothing less than Lanoff's spiritual son, to petition for his moral sponsorship and win, if I could, the magical protection of his advocacy and his love." Would you describe the kind of writer that Lanoff was?
Well, he was a writer of eminence at the time Zuckerman is talking about him. This is quite different from the way he is now in Exit Ghost, when he's a writer who's been forgotten. But at that point, he's a writer of eminence, of considerable prestige, a writer who's never written a novel, whose reputation is based on writing deeply ironic short stories about Jews. He has a kind of authorial authority that Zuckerman is very taken by. And, of course, Zuckerman being however many years he is, 23 or 24, however old he is there, is swept off his feet when he meets him.
When Zuckerman goes to New York, he finds out that there's a young writer who wants to write a biography of Zuckerman's late mentor, E.I. Lonoff. And Zuckerman's really worried about this. He wants to stop the biography because the biographer is intent on revealing this personal secret that would... it's a very ugly thing that would be revealed. And Zuckerman's afraid it would change not only the way Lonoff is seen as a person, but the way his writing is seen. Mm-hmm. And this leads to a whole part of your new novel that's really about the difference between fiction and memoir, the difference between a writer's real life and the characters that a writer creates, and what people project onto a writer based on the characters that writer has created. Mm-hmm. For the characters in your novel, they want this real clear delineation. You know, both Zuckerman and Lonoff, they don't want a public life where people know much about their lives. And you're somewhere in between. You know, I mean, you're not reclusive in the way they are, but you have been very reserved about, kind of careful about revealing details about your private life. I guess I'm really interested in hearing for you why it's important to have that kind of separation between what the public knows and what the public doesn't know. You know, like wanting to preserve your sense of privacy in the light of all that you've revealed through your characters.
That's a complicated question. I think that we have to start with the books,
mm-hmm.
And say that what the writer wants known is the book. And when the book is read through an autobiographical lens, very often the reader doesn't get the book. The reason it's very often read through an autobiographical lens is the easiest way to do it. It's also the easiest way to miss the book. It's one of the most popular ways of knowing how not to read a novel. So it isn't so much that one doesn't want people to know about you, though there are some writers who don't want anybody to know anything about them, which is their right. But it's rather that what they know about you substitutes for their reading of the book. And so someone will say, well, that's a book about so-and-so. For instance, let's take E.I. Lonoff, who you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard 100 times from people, well, that's Bernard Malamud. Well, that's not Bernard Malamud or anybody related to Bernard Malamud. But Bernard Malamud is a character they know. And because Lonoff's work is described as work about short stories about Jews, and Malamud wrote short stories about Jews, the book is then about Bernard Malamud. Well, I might as well not have written it if that's what people are going to come away from it with. To most writers, it strikes them as completely foreign, frustrating, and it isn't irritating because people know about you. It's that they don't know a damn thing about the book you've written.
Zuckerman, in your new novel, is very upset to find out that the writer George Plimpton had died, and Zuckerman didn't even know that this had happened, that it happened some time ago. And you have some really interesting descriptions of Plimpton in there. You know, in Zuckerman's mind, Plimpton is somebody who always passed himself off as like the ungainly amateur, the outsider. But as far as Zuckerman was concerned, Plimpton was this like really privileged, from an elite background, insider whose trick was to pass himself off as being a bumbler of an athlete, even though he was probably a terrific athlete and very well coordinated himself. I guess I was wondering how Plimpton figured into your personal or literary life, because you just go on for pages about Plimpton in the book.
Yeah, so I got interested in him in the book. I always like when a new ingredient gets added to a book near the end. I'm often waiting when I'm writing, if I'm two-thirds of the way down to the end, which is, give me that something new, give me that something new. And in this case, it was the appearance of George Plimpton. Mostly, Plimpton is in the book because he allows Zuckerman to be shaken by the fact of death. And illness hovers over this book, and deprivation and aging hovers over this book. And so to does death hover over the book? And the thing about George Plimpton was, as according to Zuckerman, he's the last person in the world you could expect to die. That the only reason George would die would be to write a piece about it for Sports Illustrated. So that's how Plimpton entered in as a shock to Zuckerman. Then I wanted him to think about Plimpton as a writer because he's the exact opposite kind of writer from Zuckerman. That is, he's a journalist, and a journalist is as different from a novelist as anything can be. And at one point he says, he tries to define his relationship with Plimpton, and he says, what's the word I'm looking for? He says, the antonym of doppelganger. Now, as for George in life, he was a friend of mine. I didn't see very much of him, but I always considered him a friend. I think he considered me a friend. I had a good deal of affection for him. He played a big part in my life as a young writer. My first short stories, published in the 1950s, were published in the Paris Review, which was the magazine George founded with a few other guys and edited. And I was sent these stories around to various places, couldn't get them published, and then Plimpton took them for the Paris Review. So I got to meet him, and I always felt a warm connection with him as a result of that. And then he just was such an engaging, just such a tremendously engaging presence. He gives the word human a good meaning.
You know, as we've said, like your new book Exit Ghost has a lot to do with aging and the decay of the body. In our last interview, our previous interview, when we were talking about your book Everyman, you talked about how you're not religious, you don't believe in God, and I'm wondering, like, when you think about things like aging and the physical decay of the body, do you have any kind of overarching philosophy or something that you can turn to just kind of put things in perspective that, like, we're all going to die?
Do you know what I mean? That's all you wanted to say. Well, you know, to speak about this book as an answer to your question, this book is about endurance and the strategies that people develop to endure. Zuckerman has worked out a strategy to endure, and when he comes down to New York, he puts aside that strategy to endure and barely makes it through a week.
Right, right.
Yes, when you're a certain age, you have to have a strategy to endure. And I don't know if I can articulate it, but I think it doesn't involve God. That wouldn't get me anywhere. I think there's a certain resignation about certain losses, and there's a hope that the losses will keep themselves, will contain themselves. But no, I think that there is no philosophy that I know of or a tactic that I know of other than to deal with each thing as it comes at you and do your best to hang on.
You're talking about strategies to endure. I mean, Zuckerman's strategy to endure is to completely isolate himself in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, yeah. Like you say, he sets foot in New York, sees people, and it's like, it's all over. He's it's destroying him.
He only lasts about a week, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So is that a reasonable strategy, the strategy of complete isolation?
For him.
I mean, I kind of feel like it's hurting him as a writer, too, to be that isolated because there's no new input.
Well, we don't know anything about his writing. Roth hasn't told us anything about that. I feel it's enough I have to write the books, but I don't also have to write Zuckerman's books. You know?
Everybody's saying that this is the last Zuckerman book. Mm-hmm. Are you confident of that?
Pretty, yeah.
How come?
Well, when you put it that way. I think that I've written the book in such a way. I painted myself into a corner. He's fleeing back to this world he came out of. I think I may have gotten the best of him, and I think there's a certain pathos to the book, which signifies the end. You know, not that he's dead at the end, but that he's disappeared.
Are you sorry to see him go?
Not really, no.
I mean,
no.
Does that mean he's not going to be in your mind anymore? I figure, like, you've been living with this character for but 30 years just about, so now, mm-hmm. now he's gone. I mean, does that...
I don't live... I'm not living with him when I'm not writing the book. Mm-hmm. I'm not working. And I'm not living with him even when I am working on a book and I stop and have dinner. I'm not living with him. So it's work. I won't be working with him.
Okay. Philip Roth, it's great to talk with you again. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Philip Roth's new novel, Exit Ghost, is his final novel featuring his alter ego, Nathan Zuckerman. The first four Zuckerman novels will be published in October in the Library of America's latest edition of Roth's collected works.